It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic, and from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. All right, fellas, I'll say that I was there at the game.
Oh, now we know what
unfortunate.
Happened.
Yeah, exactly, which is unfortunate, but... And we could get into about what happened at the game. We'll save that for later. But in any event,
did you get assaulted?
I saw a couple of assaults, but no, actually, I went looking for some Notre Dame people, and I was walking through the tailgating section. I ran into what was a pretty big Miami tailgater. But it was the younger crowd. It was like the late 20s, early 30s. And one kid starts dropping F-bombs on me. Hey, Notre Dame, F you, F you. So, you know, my natural instinct was just to walk over there and be like, are you serious? Like, you don't even know me. What are you doing? Like, what? You're going to start out by dropping F-bombs? You don't even know me.
Oh,
but as
you're
I started
sure
to,
didn't know you.
I started to walk towards
you're,
there.
You're sure?
No, he definitely didn't.
Yeah, I don't think that was going to end well.
I took a step towards him, and then I'm like, this isn't going to go
the way you think.
That's right. This is a really bad idea if I keep walking towards him. So I walked away. Lo and behold, funny story, Sully sends me a video of a fight after the game. That kid was
funny.
In it, and he got
dropped.
Oh, he got
drilled?
Really?
He got dropped. So that made my night. But anyways, I think what I'm about to say is going to shock you guys. But, you know, in the stadium, watching the game was probably the worst experience of my life at a away game for a Notre Dame football game. Tonight, I finally, and I don't even know what brought me to do this, but I watched the first half on the replay. And I'll be honest with you, I feel a lot better. I know that sounds
really
crazy, but hear me.
God, that must have been a hellacious experience for you then.
Yeah, it was bad, believe me. It was really bad. But let me point out a couple things, and I'd be curious as to your and Coffey, I'll ask you first. It'd be interesting to see how you respond to this. I counted about 5 huge plays in the first half that unfortunately all 5 went against us. And let me point them out to you, and then I want you to comment. First off, obviously in the first drive, you had the overthrow to St. Brown, right? I mean, I'm never going to complain about him underthrowing people for the rest of the year, but because I think he listens to the show and he just wanted to show me off. But anyways, he overthrows for the first time that I can remember. And huge play. I mean, he had the guy beat by like 4 steps. Total touchdown if he lays it in there. The very next play, Claypool is wide open for a first down and probably gets another 10 yards. Puts us easily in field goal range, and he just drops the ball. It's now 3rd and long, and we can't convert, and the next thing we do is punt. So 2 huge plays right there that if it just goes any other way, obviously, totally different scenario, right?
I couldn't really tell from the replay. I mean, it was an overthrow, but it was also a typical Equanimeous St. Brown. You know, I don't know if I really like
playing
football.
Yeah, not a great
alligator arms.
I mean, the guy is just the most disinterested, disappointing. You know, I mean, between he and Niles Morgan and Tyler Newsome, I can't think of 3 guys that were more hyped at the beginning of the year that have been more non-entities than these guys. They just have not done anything that impresses me.
I don't know if I'd agree on Morgan.
Well, does he make a play? Listen, you're right. I don't know football enough to know whether he is contributing in ways that are just unseen to the untrained eye. But can you recall, did we hear his name maybe once Saturday night, or has he made a play? Has he forced a fumble? Has he picked up a fumble? Has he gotten a hand on a ball? I mean, has he? I just can't recall. Has he had a big? Has he
yeah,
had
I didn't
a big
think he
stop?
Had a great game
you, every week you see Tavon Coney do something. He's a guy coming into the year that you're like, sure. Oh, this guy could take another step and whatever. But he, to me, he's made more plays this year than Niles Morgan, with probably maybe being on the field 80% of the time that Morgan has? Or am I off base there? I don't know.
No, I think I would agree with that. But I think we're seeing, at least before this Saturday, we've been seeing more pressure being applied by the defense. I think Morgan's been a part of that. I mean, yeah, he's not getting the sacks. I'd have to look up the stats as far as, like, tackles and tackles for loss and stuff like that. But there's no doubt he was one of the goats on Saturday, because there were a lot of plays up the middle where it seemed like until they shut that quarterback draw down, they were just getting yards and big chunks. And
did they shut it down? I didn't realize that they eventually shut it down.
No, it certainly seemed.
Yeah, I don't know that they shut it down.
No, it certainly seemed like after the first two series, they were paying more attention to it, and it wasn't nearly as open as it was.
I think you're right. After it was 34-0, we kind of held them in check.
No, not 34. I was thinking more 14-0, but, you know.
Well, let me finish these last couple of plays. So, I mean, obviously you had to throw the Berrios, which was a perfectly thrown ball. I mean, you couldn't have thrown that perfect, any better than he did. But there was also a 3rd and 7 in the very next series where, I mean, they just happened to call the perfect play. We sent a rush. They run a screen to the right side. Niles Morgan was there, but he had a lineman on him. So he had to either turn him up or push him to the outside. And the kid read it perfectly, cut inside, and it's a big gain. But that was 3rd and 7. And then you look at towards the end, at the end of the first half, right before the pick six, Book had Stepherson deep. He had his man beat by like two steps, and he underthrows him, and Stepherson's got to back to knock the ball away.
Yeah.
But if he leads him out front, the safety had committed to the inside. He wasn't there. If he just leads him, that is a touchdown. All of a sudden, it's 20-7, and they probably run the clock out, and it's a totally different ball game. Instead, it's a pick six. You're down 27-0, and you know the place was going absolutely bananas even before that. On the but the two previous plays, we held them to two field goals. Another play that I saw that I didn't even realize until I watched the replay was on that field goal where they went up 17. I take it back. Right before the field goal, 17-14, Niles Morgan came in, and he did. So there you go, Ed. Here's a play for Niles. He came in and jumped and tipped the ball.
Oh, that's right. He did. Yep.
And our guy just hit his fingertips. If that ball is tipped even 3 inches higher, it puts enough air underneath it to where our guy catches it. Not only does he catch it, but it's six. There's nobody there. And instead it goes off his fingertips. They go for a field goal. Our guy on the outside takes the wrong angle. He totally would have blocked the field goal, but he takes the wrong angle and almost runs into the kicker for roughing the kicker. But he totally was there. He had to, like, hold up.
Okay, Brant. So anyways, I don't really feel all that much better now that you
actually,
you
now
watch
I'm feeling
just gonna have to watch
through
it.
All this with us. It's, I mean, I admire your willingness to try and make this sound like a closer first half than it actually was. But I don't know. I can't go there with you, man. They did not come out ready to play.
Well, I mean, just in the first series alone, we take the ball and drive it all the way down the field. I mean, and like I said, you get the throw in the end zone, and then
it would have been a 40-yard touchdown pass, wouldn't it? I mean, I don't think we took it all the way down the field. We took it 30 yards.
Right. No, that would have been a 40-yard touchdown. But Claypool on the very next play, if he catches the ball, it's a first down.
Well,
you're now inside the 30, and we're in field goal range.
Yeah, I guess.
And he just drops
that,
it.
That's a lot of ifs I'm hearing, though.
If this, if that.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, none of those things happened. And part of the reason none of those things happened was because, in my opinion, the offensive game plan was crap. The first drive you talk about, that's fine, but there were something like 8 passes and 3 runs in that drive. If you total like the whole first quarter, we are throwing the ball all over the place.
But we started a lot of games like that this year, Mike Coffey.
Well, our bread and butter has been physically punishing defenses. Now, Miami's defense was a lot faster than a lot of the other defenses we've played, and they were being very aggressive. But there's ways you can counter aggression. There's quick hits to the line, quarterback draws, counter plays.
Well, that's just
you can make pay for that kind of thing.
I also thought that it was Chip Long's worst play calling.
Assuming that it was Chip Long's.
Oh, I know. Here we go again. Here we go.
Well, I mean, look at
this. Yeah, no, it was Chip Long. He seen called, all, he called the whole game.
You can't give, give big game Brian all the credit when, you know, or all the blame when things go wrong and all the.
I was giving him credit when I thought he had stepped back and allowed Chip Long, but that game was called very, very differently than most of the games we've seen so far. So Occam's razor tells me someone else was involved.
I don't know if I saw that. I didn't see it that way. But here's the other thing. I do think that Wimbush's hand was a factor in the game. I really do. They showed and I don't know if you guys saw this, but just on snaps alone, he was one-handing the snaps. That's, like, ridiculous.
I think he's a lot more hurt. I don't want to say a lot more hurt, but I believe he is more hurt than we've been led to believe, which is fine. I don't want coaches giving pregame information to opponents that cause them to prepare any different from what they would normally.
Think about it. How many quarterback draws that we had, like, one?
I'll tell you
night?
What. In, I think we ran in slow motion when they showed the ball flight. It looked like his right hand was the one that was hurt, not his left hand. I mean, it was not. They were not.
Those two
throws,
floaters.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just. No, they were two floaters.
Now, granted, I understand why he thinks he has to throw the ball so hard, because I think unless you get the ball stuck between EQ's top of his helmet and his face mask, the ball's not going to, you know, he's not going to catch it. So he's probably trying to just, you know, throw it in there so hard that it gets caught in EQ's body armor or something. But anyways.
To be honest, I think the wide receivers in general have been a disappointing group. I mean, Claypool's had some good plays and Stefferson's had some good plays. They've also had some drops. They've also had plays where, Ed, like you said, they don't look like they're really committing to catching the pass. And I don't know who is. I'd have to go look to see who's in charge of the tight ends this year. But once again, the tight ends are virtually invisible. I mean, they've been doing well blocking, but no one is a threat to catch a pass.
Well, I don't
think
that's completely true. I mean, Smythe has has three or four touchdown passes, and he was finding some seams, you know, certainly did in the last several games. And he had a couple catches Saturday. He had that one play where he almost got decapitated, I think, down the middle. They were just completely out of sync.
Yeah, and yeah. I think this is game 10, I think. I think one of the things they need to examine this offseason is whether the guy that they brought in from Arizona or whatever is getting it done, because quite frankly, I don't think he is.
Which guy?
Del Alexander, who coached with Chip Long at ASU, okay. I think.
I mean, I think if you're going to, and again, look, I mean, they'll obviously do this at the end of the season. They'll look at that. And you're probably right. That is probably the one area that kind of has stuck out as to underperforming would be the wide receivers.
Well, I think that's equal, if not sort of, you know, I think you got to overweight the blame on the quarterback too. He is not. I mean, they have dropped balls, no doubt about it. But he hasn't made life easy for them either.
No, I would agree. Well, I think, you know, you look at the picks that he had. I mean, he had two other ones that could have been picks.
He's had a few this year that could have.
And so, you know, clearly wasn't his better game. But again, I really wonder. It'll be interesting to see. Look, playing with one hand, I don't care what anybody says. It throws your balance off.
Sure.
It does.
Yeah,
I
agree.
You,
but that kind of
totally
leads into what Mike Coffey was saying, which I hate to be in the position of agreeing with him. But you know, the thing is that
you always know how to make me feel good.
Yeah, no,
at thanks.
But if you want to look back on the game plan, you would think like, you know, you put Josh Adams in the pistol, and you run him between the tackles, and then you put Tony Jones in the pistol, and you run him between the tackles, and you put Dexter William in the pistol, and you run him between the tackles, and you just rotate the three of them, just running downhill, and maybe you get like two or three and outs in a row before you start to dent them a little bit, but then you just punish them, and you ratchet down the probability of a turnover, and you hopefully start to assert yourself physically, and maybe you throw a little something in. But it just didn't seem to me that there was that commitment to do that there has been all year, that that's what we've enjoyed watching this year. And it just, you know, and then of course,
yeah, but I think I think the down by three scores happened, you know, so quickly that that's where things just totally got out of hand. And again, I'm just telling you from what I saw, and I'm I'm being totally honest here. I really, after watching it, felt better. Now, granted, being in the stadium and seeing that happen is about as bad as it gets.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
Well, you know, one other thing, I think, Ed, you mentioned the turnovers and stuff. I think as stupid as I think that turnover chain thing is, it does serve a purpose what I get to. It creates an atmosphere where the offense almost seems like it increases the pressure on them because they don't want to force a turnover. They don't want that stupid chain to be wagging around and all the crowd to be going crazy. So I don't know. I mean, as I said, as dumb as that thing is, it's, you know, from a psychological perspective, I think it may be more effective than I'd like to think.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame got out-coached. They got out-played. They got out-executed. You know, Mark Richt, listen, he's a good football coach, right? You know, the reason that he's not at Georgia anymore was because, you know, he banged heads with a lot of good teams in the SEC, and he just never quite got over the hump to win the big one. But he knows what he's doing. I mean, you know, he's been in a lot of big games against a lot of fast teams, a lot of good teams. So it's just the worst feeling in the world to wake up on a Saturday morning thinking you're a contender and then go to bed that night knowing you're just a real pretender.
Not even close.
Just a pretender.
Well, I don't know that. So that's where I might disagree with you. I really do think they're going to bounce back, and I guess we're just going to have to
wait
and
see. Well, sure, I do too. But I mean, how many chances
I think this team is a lot. I think they're a lot better.
How many chances do you get to be in the Final Four? That's all I'm saying. You don't. You know, it doesn't come around every year.
I know that.
All I'm
saying is,
so they just. I told you guys that if they lost to Miami, I thought this was like the least likely outcome that I expected. Right. I mean, I thought it was more likely that Notre Dame won 41-8. I thought if Notre Dame lost, it was going to be in a shootout because the defense sort of carried over from Wake Forest and they lost like 38-35 or something. The last thing I expected was them to score less than 30 points, not to mention less than 20 points, not to mention less than 10 points. So that's what really.
Completely surprised. No, Ed, I agree with you completely. I think we completely did not see anything that we've been used to seeing the last couple of weeks on either side of the ball. I mean, it seems like the entire program was just shell-shocked, and I don't know if it was just the atmosphere there or what it was. I think they were telling a story. I was at a bar, so I couldn't hear the audio very well. But wasn't there a story about there was like someone threw a bottle at the bus or something when they arrived, something along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, broke out a window.
It was
Notre Dame bus.
Yeah, it just seems like they just freaked them out.
The other thing they did is when the Miami bus showed up, the crowd surrounded the bus and started shaking it side to side. They were so fired up and were so getting after it. And it was going on the whole pregame. I mean, the place was up for grabs starting at like 4:30 when I got there. I mean, the tailgating was out of control. Everybody was walking around with that chain. Everybody was, you know, clamoring that this is their year,
You know, credit to them for that because, you know, that's how
it. Right. They were fired. But here's the thing, Ed. In the stadium, it was only after we punted. Okay, they get the ball. We hold them. We get the ball again, and then we're out, and then they score. And when they scored on that play with Berrios in there, the crowd just went apeshit.
Right.
And from that point forward, especially after that second TD, I mean, that first turnover came, and then boom, the place was just so loud you could barely hear. And it stayed that way all the way to the end of the fourth quarter. I mean, it was just crazy. Now, having said all that, I mean, and I got news for you. I'm just going to go ahead and say this. I don't know that Miami is going to win next week against Virginia. I think that's a question mark.
You've had two. No, they're not a very good team, and I think it's one of those things where, you know, they were so emotionally high for two games in a row. Now you've got a Virginia team coming to that frankly isn't that good. And now you're probably going to be back to playing in front of a at best three quarters full stadium again, and people aren't going to be nearly as fired up, especially when it's like an 11 a.m. kickoff or a noon kickoff. You know what happens there? I mean, all of a sudden their quarterback turns it over three times again, and
I think to be realistic, I think what's more likely to happen is that they eke out a win over Pittsburgh, and then they're kind of the Notre Dame 2012 in the playoff. And they go and get just absolutely housed by somebody. You know, whether it's Clemson again or whether it's – well, probably not Clemson because they'll have beaten them in the ACC game if they get there. But, you know, maybe it's Oklahoma or maybe it's Alabama or somebody like that. I don't know. I think even – you know, maybe even Wisconsin takes them out. Who knows? But
I don't think they're going to get to the playoffs. I don't see it. They're going to get beat by Clemson so bad that they're just not going to be able – they'll have the one win against us.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
And then you just – they just – they're not going to get in. I just don't see it. But anyways, that being said,
well, I guess what we should hope for is that they do get in and go all the way and either win or play a close game in the championship game, and you know we win our bowl game, and then we'll probably be in the season around 4 or 5 or something like that.
I still think we can if we win out.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, think about it. If we beat Navy and then we beat a Stanford team out there, and then Stanford goes and wins the Pac-12, which they probably won't, but even regardless, if we beat Stanford, we're gonna play either
Clemson,
Auburn,
Georgia,
or Oklahoma, Clemson.
The way it was explained to me was we win two games.
Or Penn State.
We're going to the Cotton Bowl because the Cotton Bowl really wants us. They want to sell out, and I think that would probably end up being against someone from the Big Ten, probably Penn State.
Yeah.
If we lose one game, the Orange Bowl still wants to take us. The issue there is we don't take the ACC spot in that bowl. We take the opponent's spot, and we've played most of the top contenders. So the only way I could see that really working out
would be Miami again.
Well, not Miami again, is it? But I would say if Miami somehow beat Clemson for the championship,
then we'd play Clemson.
Beyond that, it's going to be one of the ACC games in Orlando against either Big Ten or Big 12.
I haven't studied this. Is there a scenario in which we'd go to the Cotton Bowl, but we wouldn't play some stupid Big Ten team?
Yeah, I imagine so, because the Cotton Bowl gets the first pick of the also-rans, and we are. And from what I heard, the Cotton Bowl reps have already talked to Notre Dame and said, if you win two more games, we're taking you.
Okay.
So, because they get to take Notre Dame like once, I think twice over the course of this contract. And then the Orange Bowl has said, well, the Cotton Bowl doesn't take you, and we're going to. And I think at this point they're going to take us regardless. They'll take a 9-3 Notre Dame team.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if they take an 8-4 one, though. So we'll have to see.
Hmm. Well, we should be 10-2. We should be.
I think so. I think we're
And I think we still can be. I remain confident about Navy. I don't think Navy's very good this year, and as fired up as they may be to play us, I think Elko is really good. The problem with Navy the last couple of years is that the defense has been terrible, and Navy scored a lot of points.
Yep.
I don't think that's going to be a problem this year because the defense is a lot better. They're a lot more focused. Elko, I think, is good at teaching assignment football. They've been working on the option in little dribs and drabs the last couple of weeks anyway,
right.
So I think they're going to be more prepared. The key is going to be Stanford, and the key is also going to be, is Bryce Love fully healthy, or is he still dinged up? Because Stanford doesn't have a mobile quarterback. They don't have a particularly fast defense. The offense that we've been playing the last couple weeks, minus this past Saturday, can work against Stanford. They don't have the backside pursuit to shut those lanes down. And McGlinchey, and they can open up the holes to get the running game going against someone like Stanford.
Well, thanks you guys making me feel a little bit better. But I'm sure.
Well, you know me. I'm Mr. Positivity.
Boy.
I try to help whenever I can.
Oh my word!
All right. Well, let's see what happens the next couple of weeks.
That was just such a buzzkill.
Yeah, that was just such a brutal. That's a tough one to swallow.
Yeah, that was kind of. Yeah. Well, at least I had the basketball game from earlier to keep me happy. I did go to the new DePaul Arena. Nice place. We'll probably go to, my wife and I will probably go to a few more games there. Our son is a freshman there, but overall, I think two games so far, teams played well, and they just got, Mike and I were talking before the game, they just got another signee for the class of 2018, so this is going to be 5 top 100 guys. This is Mike Bray's class, or Mike Bray's best class by a long, well, maybe not a long, but it's certainly his best class. So if we're thinking the team's deep this year, the next couple of years, they're going to be even deeper.
Oh, good. Wow. Well, they won easily tonight.
Well, that's
Bonzi had 27 and 12, and Pflueger had his first double-double. And so
we should do some of these shows after basketball games once the football season.
Well, if they lose to Navy, that's probably going to be our next show is going to be February.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, we're going to leave it there. You've been listening to Dumb and Dumber, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanik and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.